right. Well, welcome back as we continue our series entitled Home Run Living. And I want to invite you to reach, if you haven't already done so, reach into your Creek Guide and pull out the sermon note insert. This week is kind of our relationship week. We have been teaching through as a congregation the book of 1 Peter, moving out of Easter and realizing that Christ took Peter after his denial and put him back into ministry and said, feed my sheep. And so over the last couple of weeks and through the next few weeks, we have been looking at the book of 1 Peter, which was his response, the Apostle Peter's response to Christ's challenge to him to feed my sheep. And so the first week I looked at the topic of being called up to the big leagues all the way through, utilizing the baseball analogy, called up to the big leagues. That's our salvation. That's being born again, a new birth. Last week I talked about the sacrifice bunt. When someone gives a sacrifice bunt, they basically give their at bat up to advance the runner from first to second, second to third, or perhaps even from third to home. This week I want to bring you a message entitled Swinging for the Fences. Now, if you know anything about baseball, there's a lot of talk about swinging for the fences, but you don't always want to step up to the plate and swing for the fences. I'll promise you, you'll strike out more than you actually succeed. Home runs just happen from a good swing. But today I want to talk to you about this. We need to understand if we're going to swing for the fences in any place in our life, we need to swing for the fences in our relationships. We need to swing for the fences in our relationships. And that certainly has to do with husbands and wives and their marriages together, but it also happens to do with parents and their kids back to the parents. Also, guys, in our relationships with other men and other people, and ladies, your relationships with other ladies and relationships with our parents, we always want to swing for the fences. We never want to settle for mediocre. We always want to look to do our best. Let me start with a couple of passages today. The first passage when it comes to relationships that we have to look at is always Matthew chapter 22. In Matthew chapter 22, some folks came up to Jesus and they asked Jesus a question hoping to trip him up. See, because back in Christ's day, you not only had the Ten Commandments, we all know the Big Ten, but the Pharisees and the legalists of Christ's day had come along and added one law after another law after another law. So by the time of Christ's day, there were not just 10 commandments, there were some 613 commandments that don't do this and don't do this and don't do this. And man, all of their relationship with God had become a thou shalt not. So they come up to Christ and they ask him the question, which is the greatest and foremost commandment? And Jesus, what they wanted to do, they wanted Jesus to pick one of those 613 or one of the 10, and then they would accuse him of basically denying the rest of them. So here was Jesus' response to that question, which is the greatest and foremost commandment? Jesus said to them, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great commandment. This is the first and greatest commandment. Look at verse 39. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So Jesus didn't choose a commandment. He said, listen, the most important thing, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul. That's the first commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself. And so we learn some principles about relationships right there that I'm going to talk about here in a few seconds. Let me go to another passage that's right there in the insert, John chapter 13. In John chapter 13, Jesus has just finished his upper room meal with the disciples just before he's led off to be betrayed by Judas. He's instituted the Lord's Supper. He's had the last meal. He's washed the disciples' feet. And now he delivers this message to his disciples. He says, here's a commandment I want to leave you with. Now, it's kind of interesting. He said, the first commandment, greatest commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul. Second is love your neighbor as yourself. And so now his last words to his disciples before he's being led off to be betrayed and ultimately denied and crucified to a cross is this. John chapter 13. He says, now a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. And he says, by this, all men will know you are my disciples if you have love for another. So let me give you three principles, three takeaways from those two passages. You ready? Three takeaways from those two passages. Takeaway number one is this, is we are called to love God and love people. As God's children, those are not options. Those are not optional. Number two is this, we are to love people, other people, totally and unconditionally. Totally and unconditionally, with an agape love, a forgiving love, an unconditional love. And number three, listen to this, the way we love others is a demonstration of our true discipleship of Christ. The way we love others is a demonstration of our true discipleship as Christians, that we're truly disciples. Now, today as we move through the message, Swinging for the Fences, and we talk about the importance of loving God, loving our neighbors, loving others, it's an example to others that we are truly disciples. The big question becomes, then how do we love one another? How do we love one another? A couple of years ago, you probably remember the book that came out, The Five Love Languages. How many of you have read those books, or you looked at them, you noted them? I want to invite my bride to come up. I'm going to have her be on stage with me today, so you get to see the better 7/8 today of the Caton family. And so, sweetheart, you take a seat right there. Y'all give my bride a hand. And you've seen this book, and we've been through the book years ago when it first came out. And if you now know anything about Gary Chapman, he has gone on to write five love languages for teens, five love languages for kids, five love languages for men, five love languages to apply in the workplace, a lot of those things. And we're going to go through those five love languages today, this kind of being marriage weekend, talking about swinging for the fences. But if you are married, I want you to know that your heartbeat, your desire, needs to be to have a home run marriage, not just a mediocre marriage. If you are single, and we now know that there's a rising population, particularly in Collin County, I think about half of the adult population in Collin County is now single. Now, so what that means is you want to learn these, so as you look for a mate, or perhaps you meet individuals that are potential mates, a husband or a wife, you can learn these five love languages and you can apply them together. Now, if you go read his book, he derives all five of these love languages from Jesus' words and actions. You can go look them up in the Gospels and you can do that. But also, if you're not planning, we need to learn to apply these five love languages to our friendships. You can apply them at the office and anywhere you are. This week, Gene and I went online, and if you look at the bottom of your insert, we went to the Five Love Languages website and retook the test. We had taken it a while back in a marriage seminar, and so we went and retook the test. You can do it for free. I want to encourage you to do it. I want to encourage you to have your kids. You can just go right online, take the test. Guys, here's the good news. It's a 30-question test. Even I could make it through the 30-question test. In the 30-question test, there are two statements. You choose one or you choose the other. That's all you got to do. Do it 30. Guys, even you can do this, all right? Ladies, go take the test. And what we did is we exchanged our love languages, our rankings, and we're going to share those with you today. It's interesting. Over the years, our love languages have kind of changed, as our station in life has changed a bit. And so let us talk to you about how do we love each other. Now, I don't get the opportunity to share the stage a lot with my bride. She's usually teaching in children or youth or at the Welcome Center or something like that. But y'all get to hear me talk about her a lot. How many of you know that? I will tell you, y'all are terrible at keeping a secret. Because anytime I say something about her, y'all immediately go out and tell her. One year, this truly happened, I told y'all, knowing she was outside, what I got her for Christmas.
Which, how smart was that? He told 2,000 people.
I thought I could trust him. What? So someone went immediately and, hey, I know what you're getting for Christmas. You're getting A. And she goes, well, I know what you're getting me for Christmas. Now, whoever did that, we've already gotten rid of them. They're no longer in the church. But as we, a lot of people think, well, you've been married almost 25 years. Everybody wants a meeting story. When did you first meet? The truth is we don't have a meeting story. We don't have that great, man, I saw him at college or whatever. I met for the first time. But we don't have a meeting story.
No, I don't. I really don't even remember meeting you. I have lots of memories of John Mark from childhood. Many of you guys know that John Mark's dad and my dad were associate pastor and pastor of our church in Spring. And so we literally grew up together. His dad's name, y'all have heard him say this before, is actually one of my visitors in the hospital the day I was born. But it took John Mark about 27 years to mature a little bit before we started dating. And so I think that's what he's talking about.
I was seasoning myself.
Yes, exactly. So moms, there is hope if you have one of those kids.
Thank you. I love you. Y'all see why I don't bring her up here a lot?
I know. I have the mic. It's
She's
so
got
freeing.
Too many
I get
stories.
To tell my side of the story finally.
Yeah, I know. But although we don't have a meeting story, I do have a fall in love story. As she said, we grew up together, and her brother and I, her brother was closer to my age. She was a couple of years younger than me.
Three.
No, a couple of years younger than me. You don't have to
Which
be so...
is now important now that he's in his 50s.
I love you.
I've got the mic.
Yes, it is. Anyway, we had grown up together. We had done things together, hung out together, but she was always my buddy's little sister, okay? And that's kind of what she was. And, she was cute, she's pretty, but it just it was not us. And truthfully, I mean, she had a crush on me the whole time, but we'll go into that another day.
27 years for him to grow up.
And so I surrendered the ministry in August of 1989. That was the first time I'd ever really in my life gotten right with God, that I'd really said, God, you can have. Baseball wasn't in the way. My desires, my wants, wanting to make money, all of those things were no longer number one in my life. I'd gotten a business degree from Baylor. I was working in the financial industry down in Houston. But I just knew, what do I need to do when I'm in my 50s? Literally, that's the way it was. And I surrendered the ministry in August of 1989. And right after that, we're in the atrium of our church, one I'd probably seen her in 1,000 times, and my mom still goes to that church down there, and all of a sudden, this is right for the first time, my heart's right with God, and I'd stopped dating, and I was just like the next person. I want to honor God and everything, and all of a sudden, I look out, kind of you're standing here and looking out those back doors, there's kind of like shining lights coming in, and I saw this beautiful girl walk in, and I'm looking, and I'm like, that's Gina. I was like, oh my gosh. And see what had happened. No, you were beautiful before.
Keep digging.
She said, keep digging. She was a couple years younger than me. I go off to Baylor. Then I come back, and she's gone to college. So we really don't see each other for college experience. All of a sudden, she walks in, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. And I know her already. There was one problem, and this is a true story. There's one problem. She was walking with a dude. She was walking with a guy, and... But he made a fatal mistake, and if you've never heard me share this story, he made a fatal mistake. They walked in, he turned and walked to the restroom. And I walked straight over, gave her a hug, and I said, how have you been? You look great. What are you doing? Who's that guy? She goes, he's my boyfriend. And I said, well, when is he going home? And she said, he's leaving this afternoon, going back to college. And I said, great. And this is exactly what I said, because I'm coming over to run with your brother tonight. And if you want to go running with us, you can. All right. And
the funny thing about that story is that John Mark was a baseball player, not a runner. No offense. They don't run very far in baseball, just little ways and here and there. And my brother, on the other hand, ran full scholarship to Rice University for cross country and track. So why he thought going running with us was going to be a good deal for him, I don't know. But
it wasn't just your brother. You're state, all that stuff too.
So he shows up to run with us as he planned. And and after about half a mile, my brother and one of my brother's friends that also ran in college, and John Mark and I stopped because of I don't know if it was the pounding of the pavement of his feet or his heavy breathing, but I could take it no more. And that is literally how our relationship began, with a conversation. We had to walk the rest of the 4 miles because he couldn't go any further. You were a good catcher. You were a good baseball player.
Guys, how many of y'all think that was genius? All right. So here's the deal, all right, in that whole deal is when I went over and said, I'm running with your brother tonight, she said, okay, and as I called out of the corner of her eye, her boyfriend was coming out of the, coming back out of the bathroom, I turned and left and walked over to her brother, because if I'm going to run with her brother that night, I've got to go tell him I'm coming over. And I looked at him and I said, hey, you need to bring a friend. All right, so her brother, state champion cross country, ran in college for Rice, full scholarship, just like a gazelle, okay, running. Well, he brings another gazelle with him, all right, and I am thinking, this is awesome. This is great because we're going to spend a lot of time together. And that was the beginning of our...
It was all pity, for sure.
So let me talk to you. Let's just start walking through some of these love languages. You write these down, and we're going to move these through. And hopefully the point is this will spark and encourage you to go to the next level, to really swing for the fences. Number one, words of affirmation. Words of affirmation is number one. Do you affirm? Here is what... in his book, Gary Chapman says, actions don't always speak louder than words. Actions don't always speak louder than words. In other words, guys and gals, we need to learn to affirm people. I will tell you, when we took the test this week, this was my number one answer. I like to be affirmed. I love for my bride to affirm me and speak positively. It's down a little bit, but still high. And words of affirmation are important to both of us in our relationship.
This is probably one that's been important to John Mark. Even obviously after we went on that run, we started dating. I don't know how we did that, but we did. And our families called it a merger in Houston, not a marriage. But we did begin the road of marriage. And I remember because I was teaching, my first teaching job in Houston area. And John Mark was here in seminary. And so we began our relationship kind of separated. And I would get one or two cards every week from him in the mail that just affirmed me and, you know, just supported me in my new job and just were always very affirming. So that's always been something that he has built, even on the foundation of our relationships. And if there's anything I can encourage you to do with your boyfriend, girlfriend, spouse, parent, child, mate, whatever it is, that the words of affirmation are so important in building up for times that are tough. But I do remember one story when I got a card in the mail, and I got it out of the mail, and it was covered in something. And so I was a little bit, you know, leery about it, but I opened it up, and inside, I kid you not, was a dried jalapeno. I still have the card. So I asked him, I was like, man, I don't know what happened to your card in the mail. You know, something happened to it. And he goes, no, when I was walking out of Kroger, I dropped my bag, and it had the salsa in it. And so that's the other thing I learned about John Mark that day, is not only he's cheap, he really is.
I'd prefer the word frugal.
Okay, what? Frugal. Cheap. And he so he went ahead and wrote in the card and sent it. I thought that was gross, but I mean, I appreciate the words of affirmation, though, you know.
Yeah. Well.
So, but he has always been good at this, and this is definitely an area that I've had to grow in. I mean, it is one of his love languages.
I would, I went back in. I was willing to buy more hot sauce, but I wasn't willing to buy another card. Just FYI on that. Look at one verse here, Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21. Let's put it up on the screen if you would. It says, the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Man, what you say has power. to bring life to your relationship or death to your relationships, even more sometimes than what you do. It's got to be both a saying and a doing. A second love language, if you look through there, is called quality time. Is quality time. Write that down. Is quality time. Here, let me define quality time for you. It says, nothing says I love you like full undivided attention. Being there for this type of person is critical. But really, really be there. In other words, don't just be in the room, but you're watching TV and you're texting and you're doing this. I mean, but truly, really being there. And when we think about quality time, this ranks right up. We love being together. I mean, we live by, love is spelled T-I-M-E, being together.
And I'm looking around the room. I'm seeing several of my friends that have lots of children like we do. We had 4 kids in 7 years. And so quality time was definitely a little bit low on the totem pole at times. But we realized pretty quickly that quality time does not have to mean getting a babysitter and this big, huge orchestration. I can remember years where quality time was that we would literally, our friends would make fun of us. We would go to Kroger and we would have sushi and Starbucks right there in Kroger. It's very good if you've never done that, but sushi and Starbucks, and then we'd go to the grocery store, and we would call it a date. That may sound lame to some of y'all, but that was the amount of time we had, and it was precious to us. And so it doesn't always, quality time when we were young marrieds and had no kids looks very different than when we were going through, you know, having kids and multiple events, and then versus now we're starting to get to be able to, you know, have a little bit. We haven't gone to Kroger lately, you know. But that's one thing, if I could stress it to you, I mean, your quality time is not to be ignored, but it's easy to be ignored. And it doesn't, sometimes we think we have to plan it so much that we just don't do it.
Yeah. You know, as we think back even, and quality time doesn't have to, like she said, you don't have to go off on a vacation. I mean, that's not the way we've been able to live since I surrendered the ministry, is going off to a trip here and a trip there. The times we've gotten to go, we love it. But, quality time, when I first surrendered the ministry, and my ministry was paying me $500 a month, and she was on a teacher salary, and so we were scraping every dime together. Our quality time, many times throughout the week, came when I was doing my PhD or whatever, came at Wendy's. On Sunday night after church, before we finished the week, we would stop and we'd buy a Frosty and we'd share a Frosty together. And those were still great days, just being able to have the opportunity to spend time together. Sometimes you do things for the quality of times. I do things that I really don't enjoy, but I know it's important to her. Sometimes I brought her hunting with me. Those haven't always turned out so great.
Yeah, those are not good stories, ladies. If y'all don't hunt, John Mark's family grew up hunting. My family, not so much, like never. And so the first time he took me, he said, we're going to spend some quality time together. We're going to go hunting. So I'm thinking, all right, you know, I'm outdoorsy. And so we go to this hunting camp that we were going to and stop and get a big gulp on the way. And he never tells me that once you get out there, you're stuck. You know, so we get out there. Of course, I have to go to the bathroom. We're in the middle of nowhere. There's no bathroom, no nothing. And we're stuck. And I said to him, I got to go. And he goes, you're stuck. I'm going, this is not quality time. This is not quality time. And so we tried it one other time. We tried hunting one other time. That didn't go so well either. But find whatever you both can do with quality time.
It was good. But that, yeah, really what happened is we only had the evening hunt. We was on our way back from Houston Spring up here. Guy had said, hey, go hunt. Shoot anything you see. And so we had an afternoon hunt. We got in... got in the blind, and we hadn't been in the blind 45 minutes or an hour. She said, I got to go to the restroom. I go, you can't get out. She goes, well, how much longer do I have to stay in here? I said, you see that sun? When that sun goes down, you can get out of this blind. And that was an encouraging day.
That was not our best quality time.
I think it took us about 15 years for me to get her back out there. Yeah. But let me put one verse together, and this has to do with scriptures. Hebrews chapter 10, look at it. Quality time. It says, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing. You know, that's talking about the church, the congregation, but it also talks about our relationships as we love one another and worship together with one another, that we can't give up meeting together as a couple, as friends, as men, as ladies, as a congregation. Quality time is very important. Next, let me give you the third one. Giving and receiving of gifts. Write that down. Giving and receiving of gifts. And I'll just tell you, when we took the test this week, this ranked at the bottom on both of our test scores. Giving and receiving gifts, it's not something that I desire. It's not something that she desires. And part of that is we just haven't had a lot of gifts maybe to exchange. It's just not something that matters when it comes to affirming words or quality time. We'll choose those over gifts all of the time. But there are some people in here that are gift givers and gift receivers. That's your love language. You love to give gifts and receive gifts. And let me just share this with you. It's one statement he made in the book as I was reading this week. He said, don't mistake this love language for materialism. Don't mistake this love language for materialism. In other words, we need to understand that just because someone is a gift receiver, that's the way they receive, doesn't mean that they have to have the nicest cars or the nicest house or the biggest, most. They really focus on the energy and effort that it took for you to go pick it up, package it up, and give it to them. It's not the price tag that's on it. So gift giving, it's low on both of ours.
Yeah, it's low on both of ours, but it's something that we were convicted within our relationship that we needed to do a better job at. And John Mark got the conviction straight on. One night we had the opportunity to go eat Valentine's dinner with James and Shirley Dobson and Ray and Sandy Pace. Yeah, the Dobsons.
Just the six of us.
The Dobsons. Dobson. You know, like the love Dobsons, you know. On Valentine's Day. So she leans over and she asks, Miss Dobson leans over and asks John Mark what he got me for Valentine's Day.
It's Valentine's
It was awkward night, but... silence there for a moment. And so she chastised you pretty well.
Yeah.
And it's the first time I've seen my husband speechless. But at that moment, we said... At that moment, we did say, you know what, we need to be better about this. You know, we don't have to spend a lot of money on gifts, but we do need to be better. I have friends that is my sister-in-law, that is definitely her love language. She is phenomenal at it. And we try to remember that with our kids. But it, like he said, it's the time that you put into, you know, whatever it is, the thought process you put into whatever the gift is. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, skip past this next verse. Go to John chapter 3:16. We put them all in there. Look at this. For God so loved the world that he what? He gave. He gave his only son. God gave. He sacrificed for us. Christ gave. He sacrificed for us. And so we need to understand that gift giving, it's a love language. When God gave his son, that was his love language. When Christ gave his life, that was his love language. We need to express our love in giving gifts and also receiving gifts. But like I said, for us, this has never really been a big part of our life. It's never been a strong part of our life. All right, number four, you ready? Acts of service. Acts of service. Write that down. It means just simply doing things for other people. Here's what he said in the book. He says, he asked a question. He said, can vacuuming the floors or doing the dishes really be an expression of love? And the answer is absolutely. Guys, especially if you see your bride drowning. Man, at least the good news today, guys, we have the opportunity to pause the TV during a football game. All right, so we don't have to miss it when we go help out around the house or pause the baseball game or the NBA playoff game. Go help out. And the same thing the other way. Ladies, just if you seem strung out, stressed out, worried, what can I do for you? One of my acts of service always seems to be when my bride or my kids ask me, hey, do you want to take my car today? Here's what I've learned. That means when I start the car, that little orange empty sign is going to be on. And it's probably time to get the car washed.
You're so good at it, though.
I am good at that. So anyway, acts of service.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we've already shared that we're trying to be better in the gift-giving area. But we asked ourselves as we were thinking about today, what's the best gift I ever gave you? Or what's the, you know, we hardly could remember the gifts. But when we asked ourselves, what's the best thing I ever did for you under acts of service? Man, we could just spout off, you know, I remember when, and I remember when. That's just what really, you know, touches our heart. And this, again, kind of like quality time, is something that changes with whatever phase you're in, you know, and it changes with your children, it changes with your coworkers, you know, this definitely does. But I remember when John Mark and I were first married, we got married because that run went so well. And I applied here in Dallas, knew nothing about the Dallas area, and ended up at a job in the Farmers Branch, Josie Lane and Harry Hines area. Knew nothing about the area. And got here, was supposed to be the cross-country track coach and an English teacher. And when I showed up, I was now the basketball coach and an English teacher. But the problem was, I never played a sport that had a ball in it. So I was struggling. I was struggling a little bit with that. And so I'll never forget, you know, he was working at First Baptist Dallas at the time and full-time seminary student. And he came to my first game. And I'd been telling him, I don't really know what I'm doing. And he came to my first game and watched my junior high girls play. And he said, put him in a zone. He sent a note over, put him in a zone. And I sent a note back over through our little manager girl. And I said, they are. It was so sad. And so he said, call a Saturday practice. So literally every day he worked it out with our administration. He would come after seminary and he would coach me, really. And then the next day I would coach the younger girls, whatever he would say. But it was that, just that time that he gave up, that act of service that he gave up to spend time with me, helping me in a week area. And I think this is something that our acts of service should target. You know, if he's not very good at organization, then I try to help him in that area of service. You know, whatever you know that your coworker, your mate, your children, whatever their weaker areas are, those are great areas to target for service. But that was just something. By the way, we ended up doing pretty well in basketball, yeah. But and have some great stories for it. But it was definitely a sacrifice of time.
You know, and we look back and think back of some of those sweet years, some great things came out of that. And that was not what I wanted to do. When she first took the job, she walked in, she goes, I'm the head basketball coach. I went, oh, boy. And then I said, well, when you get into season, you know, the head basketball coach, varsity coach, come down, give you some offenses, give you some defenses. And she would say, man, they're not helping me at all. No one's coming to practice. And I'm thinking in my mind, surely they're giving her more help than she's saying. She just lacks confidence. And, of course, I'm like, sweetheart, you're doing good. You'll be great. You'll be awesome. You'll be this. And then I went to the first game, and they were terrible. And I am sitting across, and they are getting drilled by this team at halftime. I mean, they're already down by 25 points, and the girls are just getting taken advantage of by kids that have been playing basketball all their life. These girls had never played basketball. And so I literally called the trainer over, ripped out a piece of my day timer, and I told him, I said, hand this to Gina. And it said, put them in a zone. She wrote, they are in a zone. And I go, it's a bad zone. All right. And so we ended up, the rest of the year, we worked it out with the principal because he knew they hadn't gotten the help. And I would drive by and work with her at practice. And whatever I did in that afternoon practice, she would do with the girls the next before school practice, and it worked that way. And I would sit behind her at the game and go, put in number 32 for number 5. That's exactly what happened.
That is what happened.
And tell them about your technical foul.
It was your fault. That's what I'm going to tell them.
It was.
He told me I needed to get the ref's attention, and because they were calling one-sided, which our girls were pretty aggressive, but they were calling one-sided. And so I stood up. Ladies, you have to picture me. I'm in my Laura Ashley dress. Y'all remember those? With my Papagallo shoes and my big bow in my hair. And so I stand up and I stomp my foot and I was like, would you open your eyes and make a call? And so he teed me. He gave me a technical. He teed me up right there. I was so embarrassed. It was a home game. And so I turned around and just glared at him. I was like, that is not what I was so embarrassed.
Like, that's awesome, man. I said, you got his attention.
I like the non-contact sports much better is what we decided. But acts of service, that was definitely something that stuck out, you know, to us and in our minds.
Yeah. All right. Galatians chapter 5, put it up on the screen. Notice what it says. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in the Lord. Man, serve one another humbly. That goes for husbands and wives. That goes for our friends. That goes for relationships. The office as well. Boy, you really want to change the dynamic of what's going on at the office. Consider that. Number five, here you go. It's physical touch. Write that down. Physical touch. And before all the guys get excited, let me just read you exactly what Gary said. All right. His first statement is this language isn't about the bedroom. This isn't about the bedroom. This language has more to do with hugs and holding hands and pats on the back and kisses on the cheek. That's what this love language has to do with. And if you look the way we take it now, I want you to know this is Gina's number one. And if you look at the list, this one's barely above gift receiving for me. I mean, it's at the bottom and it's at the top of hers. Part of that is how we grew up. We grew up a little different when it comes to touching and hugging. But, you know, it's one of those things that I've tried to learn over the years. And from the time we really started dating, I tried to become much more of a toucher and a hugger.
You've gotten better at it. I don't know if y'all were in here a few weeks ago. We had just an amazing prayer time in the service. At the end of the service, John Mark just called everybody to pray for what was going on in your family, what was going on in your lives. And so I had come in a little late from working the Welcome Center, so I was sitting in that back corner. And I am just me and God. I am in prayer and totally focused on, you know, my prayer. Next thing I know, somebody comes in and kisses me. Well, last time I saw him, he was standing right here on the stage. And so to say I was startled was a little bit of an understatement. I mean, it scared me to death. And he goes, "What's the matter?" And I was like, "Well, who's kissing me?" You know, I didn't know who was kissing me. But so he definitely has, you've definitely come a long way in that. He was, I don't know why he didn't tap me on the shoulder, but that's, you know, a little heads up there next time. Yeah. Yeah, but so he definitely has come a long way in that area. But the other story that that he totally did to embarrass me was at our 15-year reunion at Cottonwood. They called me on the stage, and he hits me literally in front of all of you guys, hits me on the rear end like I'm a baseball player, right in front of everybody. And I look at him like, yeah, physical touch is important, but...
A little swat on the butt, just like...
Yeah.
That was not a good choice there, but I kind of thought it was funny.
But it does. It amazes me. You know, we'll walk up to. You know, we have the opportunity because our kids are involved in so many different sports. We have the opportunity. We'll walk up. You know, holding hands to one of the things, and it amazes me that people will make like that's a big deal. You know, oh how cute or something like that. That should be, you know, physical touch. You know, hand holding, whatever, patting on the back. Should be, you know, a natural thing with us and with our kids. And I like how he shared this was not natural to him. My family grew up very huggy and touchy, and that's the way my parents both were. But it doesn't mean that you can ignore it if it's not natural to you.
Yeah, we had a very loving family, but we weren't big huggers. We weren't that just wasn't who we were. But that, you know, her dad was like Mr. Hug and Touch. I mean, it was like, and gift givers. I mean, he was like everything I'm not, like a really good dad. You know, like he'd like send flowers, you know, talking about being cheap or frugal, whatever. He would send flowers to her like, now that you're 16 years, 6 months and 3 days, I wanted to give you a dozen roses. And I'm like, those roses are going to die. And they cost a lot of money.
Cheap.
That was the way, frugal. And that was the way he was. So let me just give you this one, Romans 16:6. You can do this right now if you want. Ready? Look at it. It's on the screen. Greet one another with a holy kiss. As long as it's holy, you can kiss her, guys. But touch, hug, the point is that physical contact. So let me go down, and here's how I want to close today. We got three challenges. Let's put them up on the screen. Challenge number one, closing challenge number one is this. Go ahead and put it there. Use all five different ways to communicate love to people. Use all five. Number two, no matter how well you may or may not have communicated love in the past, this is a new day, a new beginning, to begin walking a life of love. And then number three, and I want to encourage you to do this. The website is on your insert. You can go on and you can have your kids take the test for free, 30 questions. You can do it in 10 minutes. They will send you a report. You can compare. And had you compared us years ago, our love languages have changed. Let me tell you, this is what, you know, we want to, you know, we're blessed to have the marriage that we had, but that doesn't mean that it's always just been easy.
Yeah. I think back on times that, like in our marriage, if you go through down, you know, valleys in your marriage, they were the times that we let these love languages go on autopilot. And as you know, love is amazing. Love is also work, and it doesn't consist of autopilot. I mean, they get watered down, and that's when your marriage opens up for vulnerability.
Yeah. And so over the years, boy, we've been in those seasons of life where I would wake up and I'd go to church, work. I would drive to Fort Worth working on my PhD seminar. I'd come home, have a meeting at the office. I'd spend all night typing a PhD paper. I'd wake her up at 3 a.m. and say, I need you to
edit
this paper because I was a terrible writer. And so then what would happen is as she's editing, she would criticize. Actually, she would say, edit. I felt criticism. And then I was like, get mad. We'd have a little tiff.
Well, you wrote in all caps. Every word was all caps.
We don't have to go into that much detail. But, you know, and there are times that, man, it's good. And then she's pressed. And then our four kids and, you know, crazy things. And that doesn't mean it's easy. But you work at it. You can find time. You can give gifts. You can have physical touch. You can have affirming conversation. You can do all of those things. So here's what we want to do. I just want to pray as we close. And here's my prayer. At the end of my prayer, our altar team is going to be here. And if you want to come pray for someone. If you want to come know more, if you want to pray for your marriage, your relationship, maybe someone else's marriage, you do that. But our prayer is that when it comes to your relationships, you'll swing for the fences. That's our desire. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for this day, and thank you for my precious bride, and just all the years she's put up with me and tolerated me and just given me grace and love. And Lord, my prayer is that just like these last 25 years, that perhaps I can even these next years be a better husband and learn to love her and our children in greater ways. Lord, I pray that I'll learn to communicate my love for this church and this congregation better over the years and our friends. And God, if there's somebody out there that's really struggling, someone that's struggling with a recent divorce or current difficulty or rough patch in their marriage, that this would be a new day, that they would begin to prepare now for what you have next for them in redemption and grace and love. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.